Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman joined by the head coach. And Gus, you're a little under the weather earlier this week. You doing all right?
I'm doing good now.
You going to make it?
I'm going to make it.
We need to get you some fluids or anything like that?
I'm drinking my Gatorade. No, it was, you know, just a little bit something on Monday that got the best of me. But, no, now we've been back with our guys on Tuesday and Wednesday and now Thursday.
You still got a little frog kind of working in your throat there. You know that.
Well, hopefully that will diminish as we go on.
Do they, they should start putting coaches on, like, the injury report.
All right, Logs.
Probable.
I told you, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this.
There was a couple guys that said, hey, make sure you bring that up with Gus. And I'm sure you can figure out who it is. The injured players this week, let's get an update on them. Will Blackman. Fractured index finger. How's he doing?
He's doing good. He had surgery. I have not yet to talk to him. I know our trainers have, and you know, supposedly everything went well. I hope to talk to him tonight now, and you know, after he's had some of the surgery things taking place. So hopefully good to go. You know, after the surgery, we'll see how long he'll be out. Alan Ball. You know, he's another individual that has decided, I think it's in his best interest to have surgery. So he'll have surgery coming up in the next week or so.
And he had a bicep tear of some kind. I don't know the exact particulars of it. I've been through that before. My tendon tore off the bone, and I don't know if Will – I mean, I guess a tear can be middle of the muscle, the tendon in the elbow, or the tendon up in the shoulder. And I know that most of the doctors are very cautious about that because of what it can lead to in the future, shoulder issues
sure.
or elbow issues.
Right, yeah. And you know what I love about Alan was he went and, you know, had our opinion, second opinion, and said, let me go another week and see if I can deal with some of the pain issues and how the injury is. And you know what? I think we just sat down and talked about it and said, you know what, for the best interest of him personally and our team, you know, let's just make the decision now and have the surgery.
Yeah, because sometimes I'm sure that's hard as a coach because, you know, you actually are trying to look down the road. I mean, you're talking about a good football player starting corner for you guys. And in reality, that what's best for him long term is going to be best for you guys.
Right. Well, and you know what? He has been playing really well, you know, really consistent football on the perimeter there at our corner spot. So, it you know, that's why I think with injuries that take place to your starting guys, it's always tough. And we're not going to shy away from saying that. But, you know, with that, I think it does provide opportunities for some of our guys. And I know they're excited about the opportunity, so we're excited as a coaching staff.
Aaron Colvin was a fourth-round draft pick that you guys got out of Auburn. He tore his ACL at the Senior Bowl.
Oklahoma. Yeah.
And now that would make him basically almost 11 months, maybe 10 and a half months post-surgery for the ACL reconstruction. You guys have the ability to activate him, I guess, at any time at this point, right?
Right. Anytime. Once we start him practicing, we have 3 weeks to make a decision on his future as far as when to, you know, either place him on IR, full-term IR, or to activate him.
Is that a lot to ask of a guy coming back from an ACL reconstruction to have 3 weeks of practice at a level that he's never even been at before, the National Football League level, and expect him to be active and then playing? Or is that something that maybe not
well,
be too big for him?
No, it's not too big for him. He's a great competitor. I think for us, we've kind of, you know, last week we gave him a practice here and let him go and compete and then we were trying to be real smart with him. This week, we gave him a couple more. Today, actually, we worked him pretty hard to see how he comes back tomorrow. So I think we're taking it slow with him and see how he can handle it. But his spirit and his competitiveness now, he is, I think, in his terms, in his mind, he's ready to go.
From watching him on film pre-injury when he was at Oklahoma, he looks like he's got a lot of traits of a nickelback. You know, real quick, because, I mean, typically a nickel guy is covering a slot receiver, and slot receivers a lot of times are those, I guess you could say, Wes Welker types.
Right. Yeah, he does. Has a lot of short area quickness, but long speed too. So just a very talented. Now, maybe not the traditional corner that you maybe seen us look to, like a Demetrius McCray or Jeremy Harris or Alan Ball, that size and that length. But speed, short area quickness, competitiveness, I mean, the highest marks. I mean, this guy was supposedly, you know, coming out of the draft before he got injured, a guy a lot of people were considering as a first-round pick. So be able to get him and then be patient with him and bring him along, you know, it's a great, you know, opportunity for us, and thanks to our scouting staff.
Had the chance to watch him before the game against the Miami Dolphins because he went through a complete workout. You know, before the game, Tom Selinski, your strength and conditioning coach, works out a lot of the guys that are either practice squad or going to be inactive for the game. And he was one of the players that I had the opportunity to watch before the game this past week. And watching him work, the guy is not afraid of hard work. And he looked like he was moving exceptionally well. I've been through an ACL, and you can kind of see certain, I guess you could say, hesitancies, yeah. or
yeah, not with
don't
him.
See it.
No, not with him. I mean, this guy, I mean, Logs, I can't say enough about just his attitude. I mean, here he comes off ACL. He goes through it in the Senior Bowl. But ever since we had him in Jacksonville, his work ethic, his mindset, his attitude, I mean, bright-eyed, spirited, always a smile on his face, attacking the day. I've never seen him have a bad day. And, just to see that come through now and for him to get an opportunity to practice, and we're trying to get him up on the 53, it's awesome.
All right, let's another guy. Luke Jokel left the game against Miami Dolphins with a head injury. He is in the concussion protocol.
Yep.
Where does that put him at, and what is that protocol exactly for him? Because he practiced today, right?
Yeah, he didn't have – it was no contact, okay. So he just went through primarily individual. But it does – you know, here's one of the cases where he passed some of the protocol tests early, so it gave him an opportunity to proceed and gives him an opportunity to possibly be ready to go on Sunday. So right now, tomorrow, he'll get a chance to go through practice. And then after that, they'll meet with him, and he has to pass another test. And if he clears that, then he's got a chance to play on Sunday. So, you know, he's gone through it and passed all the tests thus far. So the arrow's pointing up for him at this point.
While he was out last week, you had an undrafted rookie, Josh Wells, from James Madison, who stepped into the lineup. And I remember when he was running out onto the field – because, you know, on the sideline, you could see that all of a sudden he put his helmet on and he started loosening up. And this is kind of before we knew what exactly was wrong with Luke Jokel. And so all of a sudden you see him warming up and you're like, okay, what's going on? And then you see a doctor with Luke and it's like, oh, okay, something's going on with Luke. And to have an undrafted rookie from James Madison to step into the lineup in his first game ever against a really good football player and Olivier Vernon, who's a big, powerful guy, who I was concerned about the matchup with Luke Jokel against Vernon, and to have Josh Wells play pretty well, looks like he had a mental error, and then he gave up a sack on a spin move against a really good football player. I thought he played pretty well.
He did. You know, he came in. That's why we saw him where he was inactive for a couple of weeks, but we just felt like he was progressing. And Sam Young's was playing really well, but this was at the left tackle spot. And I just felt that, I think, you know, our offense, I should say, and Luke Buckus just felt at the left tackle spot, if something should happen, Josh Wells gives us some of the traits we're looking for. And, you know, Josh's credit, he went in there, did perform pretty well. And it didn't surprise us as a coaching staff because it really isn't too big for him to go in there. And that's sometimes, right, Lux, the best way to go in there.
Yeah.
It's not to know
you don't have to think
you're
about starting.
Yeah, you just get thrown in there and you go and perform. And so that was really cool for him.
And he has the ability to play right tackle, too, because I remember watching his college tape. He was left side and right side. This has to be a guy that your staff is excited about to watch him to develop. Because, I mean, how often do you find an undrafted guy that can play left tackle?
Well, you know what? That's what I say. It's really a credit to, first of all, Dave Caldwell and our scouting department to bringing these guys to our attention. And then a guy like Luke Buckus for developing him. And and that's really across the board with our coaches. We challenge them to be developmental coaches. Let's take these young guys and really develop them. And, you know, there's great stories taking place with a guy like Josh Wells and Luke Bowinkle, you know. Who would have thought, you know, for him and where he was drafted, he'd be starting. So a lot of these little stories taking place, and it's a credit to really the players.
Yeah, and you mentioned Luke Bowinkle. The week before against the Cleveland Browns, he had to come out a couple different times with an ankle injury. Last week was on the injury report and then comes out and plays in the Miami Dolphins game against a very good front, and he played very well.
He did. You know, the whole front line. I know it's classic because Zane Beatles came to me and wanted to visit just when we had, 11 carries for 17 yards, and saying, Gus, what do you think? You know, what else can we do? And, you know, we had the conversation. Just stick to it. Make sure that we continue to get better, continue to communicate, and just trust it now, Zane, and to see it come together. And he's really spearheaded it now. He's been a tremendous leader in that room, tremendous conviction, and done a really good job with all those young guys.
Boy, and his play has gotten better, which is important. I mean, because, you know, you can't lead unless you're playing better yourself.
It is. And it was challenging for him because he knew it. He was the first to admit sometimes those one-on-one opportunities, you know, they got the best of him. But just watch him in one-on-one pass rush. You start to see the confidence come back. You saw the poise. You didn't see him lunge. You really sat back in a stance. And it just started to come together for him. And he's playing a lot better.
All right, here's the number for folks to chew on here. In the last 2 weeks, the Jaguars offense has rushed for 185 against Cleveland, 176 against Miami. That gives them an average over those 2 weeks, 180.5, and also a 5.5 yards per carry average. That those numbers are the best in the National Football League.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's a credit to our guys. Okay, we're rushing for 175 yards, 180 yards the last two games. One, we were fortunate enough to win. But, okay, so that can't be it. You know, what else is that? And that's what we look at as a coaching staff and say, all right, we've just missed some opportunities, through special teams, offense and defense.
Well, you know, when you're running the football for those kind of numbers, you'd like to have the passing game kind of be a little bit stronger. And you guys turn the ball over a couple times. We come back. I want to talk about that. Blake Bortles, the young quarterback, having two pick sixes against the Miami Dolphins. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
This portion of the Gus Bradley Show is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. All right, Gus, your young quarterback last week had a tough day. Two pick sixes. I actually showed them on film earlier in the week on Jaguars All Access on Monday night. One of them was a great play by Lewis Delmas, the cornerback coming off of Cecil Shorts, and then the other one was kind of an ill-advised throw on a slow-go route to Cecil Shorts. And then he has the fumble. I mean, a tough day for a young guy, but, I mean, young guys got to fight through that, don't they?
Yeah, he really does. You know what? Those three plays really stand out. But he did. I mean, the Hearns throw was tremendous. You know, and plays like that you see from him. And I think a telltale sign is the play. He throws a pick six, and Jed Fish comes back and calls a play. Now, it wasn't intended for Clay Harbor, but that's where Blake went. He went to the seven cut on the side, perfectly thrown ball. Just didn't have a lot of opportunity for Clay to make the play because it's so close to sideline. But it wasn't a draw play. It wasn't a run. It wasn't a toss play. It was come back. And I think it was a message to Blake was just, hey, we have no fear. We want you to have no fear. And we're going to continue to teach you to have that mindset. We want you to continue to be aggressive. Now, obviously, we got to make good decisions. And Blake knows that. He's his own worst critic when it comes to that. But to come back with that type of mindset and for him not to flinch, that tells a lot about his personality.
Well, you talk about the mindset. First of all, the play calling. I mean, to come back after every interception this year and call a pass, that's what it's been, okay? The statistics show that. And then, but for him, like you talked about, to where Clay Harbor was not the primary target. It was a more difficult throw. But for him to have the courage on the next play to throw that, which is a very hard throw, I mean, that speaks a lot about him.
It does. You know, and I think it's a mindset to want to be to make great plays. And I think we thirst for that. Now, we've got to tone it down. I should say he's got to make decisions have a conscience at least for the team. But he knows that. I mean, Blake knows that he can't make inerrant throws or, you know, throws that aren't what the best interest for us. And he'll get those corrected. It's not going to be his last interception.
No, no.
It's not. You know, but, you know, I think he's learning from, and that's my challenge to him, is say, hey, with these opportunities that come up, these so-called failures, as people want to talk about, learn from them. Grow from, because if you don't learn from and you stop growing from, then we have issues. And he's not like that.
Is it a fine line that you walk with a young quarterback, and that you want to be, as a coach, demanding, you know, we need to see improvement, versus also, hey, look, I mean, this is part of the growth process?
Well, I think there's, if you look, if just think of this, Lux, if you took those three plays and set them aside, would you see improvement from Blake? You say, yeah, we saw some great throws.
Nice,
we
nice
saw
throws.
Some nice third down throws, a seven cut to Hernsey. You saw some good things. So, okay, don't forget about that now. He's doing some really good things that are taking place. All right, but we have to address these, and we have to get these things corrected.
All right, in that course of that game, you think early on, and then the opportunity to Allen Robinson.
Yes.
You know, and nobody's really talked much about this, but, you know, Allen Robinson, when he makes his break coming out of the route, kind of chokes it down just a little bit. And you wonder, okay, well, here's another young player. When he makes that cut, and if he's still running at the same speed, is that a touchdown?
Right. Yeah, and they just, you know, and that's, you know, Blake says, hey, that's on me. Allen Robinson says, hey, that's on me. And, you know, all right, well, let's get it corrected. And, you know, I think just like those situations that come up, the more they get a chance to play with one another, the more opportunities in the offseason to throw, you know, those things will come into play.
This week, the Cincinnati Bengals on defense have six guys in their secondary that are first-round draft picks. Reggie Nelson, obviously, was a first-round pick here. Dre Kirkpatrick was a first-round pick for them in 12. Terrence Newman, a first-round pick all the way back in 03 for the Cowboys. Adam Jones, an 05 first-round pick for the Tennessee Titans. And Leon Hall, a first-round pick in 07 for the Bengals. And also Darquise Dennard, it's number six, their first-round pick this year. I mean, this is going to be a challenge for him.
Yeah, they have no issue at depth at corner. No, tremendous players now, tremendous players. And I just think of the competition going on there for playing time. So, yeah, very talented at the corner spot from really the top of the depth chart all the way down.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch, because you know what? And you said it before. When you take a team on, you want them at their best, and you want to always face somebody's best. Well, this best is pretty doggone good.
It really is. You know, as a team, they play very well at home, had a tremendous record at home, and have played well. You know, for us, it's an opportunity to go up there, and I just want to keep building off what we've established. Keep the running game going. Let's make good decisions in our passing game, but let's continue the high percentage that we're throwing at. Defensively, let's continue to get takeaways even more. It's not enough, but let's be very good against the run and be tighter coverage against the pass like we're showing. So all these things take place, but in special teams, if we can just put a full, complete game together, that's really our objective. And we have a great opportunity to do that now in Cincinnati.
Well, special teams, you mentioned them specifically for your team. The field goal protection, you got to fix it, don't you?
We do. And, you know, sometimes situations like that require some flexibility. It might not be taking guys off the team, but it might be just realigning guys. You know, instead of being the tackle, you're the guard now. So we got to take a look at that and what provides us the best possible situation to displace our personnel.
All right, we come back on the Gus Bradley Show. I got a question for you about Florida-Georgia weekend and how it would relate to you. You got any idea where I'm going with this?
No, not
good,
yet.
Good, good, good. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Well, folks, you can join the man right next to me, head coach Gus Bradley, at the 5th Annual McKenzie's Run on November 22nd. This 5K run and walk plus a one-mile fun run starts and finishes inside Everbank Field. It benefits the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help youth recognize their full potential. To register your team, go to mckenziesrun.org. Back here on the Gus Bradley Show, I mentioned the Florida-Georgia game that is this weekend here at Everbank Field. And I was actually looking at the roster of the Bengals in your football team, and so you have basically 53 roster spots per each team. With 106 guys, out of those 106 guys that will be on the field in Cincinnati, there are 10 of them from Florida and Georgia combined. That's like 9-point-something%. That's unbelievable.
It is. How about that?
Yeah.
They'll be watching that game then for sure, you know, some of the guys. I know our guys talked, but I just talked to Josh about it today.
And, Josh Evans.
Yeah, Josh Evans. And I said, Josh, how about it, man? Can you remember it? And he goes, oh, unbelievable atmosphere. I mean, just a great thing to be a part of. He said, actually, last year, because it was our bye week, he kind of walked around because he's playing in it. Mm-hmm. But just to walk around the perimeter, he said, it's unbelievable atmosphere.
He's probably incognito and just enjoying it.
Yeah, he was. You know, I didn't. That's all I asked him, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
He just said he was walking around.
9.5% of the game day rosters between the Bengals and the Jaguars this weekend will be Florida and Georgia alum. Tremendous number.
It really is. What a credit to both institutions, you know, the players that have come out of there and done well in the NFL.
So how this relates to you, North Dakota State University, okay. What game would compare to Florida and Georgia at the North Dakota State University level?
Well, it's the biggest game of the year for Florida and Georgia.
Right,
so
right,
for
right.
us, it's North Dakota State would be University of North Dakota. Although, we haven't played them for so long.
Why?
It used to be a strong, strong rivalry. And then when North Dakota State decided to go to Division I, 1AA actually, and Division I in all other sports, UND was against it. So they said, hey, we couldn't make the playoffs for 5 years. Hey, we need to still play UND because we were having a hard time finding opponents. And UND backed out of the contract. They just said, hey, we're no longer going to play. So there was a rift. And uh-huh. then it stopped. And now it has been, I think next year now they're starting to back up.
Okay, so a little geography lesson. Fargo, North Dakota is the home for North Dakota State.
Yes.
Right? University of North Dakota, is it in Bismarck?
Grand Forks.
Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Yep. Okay. 90 miles away.
90 miles, and so if I remember right, Fargo is almost into the state of Minnesota.
Well, they're both right on the border.
They're both right on the border.
Yep, there's Grand Forks, East Grand Forks, Fargo, Moorhead.
Okay. So which direction would you leave Fargo to go to Grand Forks?
Straight north.
Straight
right
north.
Right up, straight
okay,
north.
Straight north.
Yep.
And is that the longest rival at North Dakota State?
The longest rival?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that thing, I mean, that was back on TNT, they did a special on. I mean, that went back to like early 1900s. It's like one of the longest standing rivalries in the world.
College game day was at North Dakota State.
Oh, yeah.
Were they there this year?
Yeah, this year, last year. Yeah, it's a great atmosphere now. Great
and that's playoff football, isn't it?
Yes, 1AA.
1AA is playoff football.
Yep. Huh. And the last 3 years, and North Dakota State's won the national championship, I believe. So
okay.
They're going after their fourth this year. So.
When you were there as a player, did you guys ever win a national championship?
Yeah, it was Division II. So, in my 4 years, the first year we lost on a last-second field goal. And then 85, we won the national championship. 86, we won the national championship. So my freshman and sophomore year. 87, we did not. My senior year, we won the national championship.
So 2 out of 4?
3 out of 4.
Three out of four.
When I was redshirted freshman, I wasn't eligible, but we lost on the last second field goal to Troy State.
Are you allowed to count that redshirt year as being a part of the
Oh, yeah, I do, man. I'll count them all. No, it was a fun time. You know, everybody, wherever anybody went to college, they always think of the great moments they had and the great friendships. And, you know, people think of Fargo, North Dakota, man, that's cold up there, but great people. I've said that before. Jacksonville really reminds me of the type of people where I'm from, Minnesota and mm-hmm. North Dakota and that area.
Did you guys have spring football up there?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be funny. I'm being serious here because most of the time spring football starts usually in March.
Yeah, it started a little bit late.
That's what I was wondering.
It went a little bit
later.
When
did things thaw out to where you could have spring football?
Yeah, in April. But we would go out there and practice, and the turf might be, you know, some snow on there or it's frozen or, you know, there wasn't ideal conditions, Log. Like you know how you said he went to Buffalo and he put long johns on?
Yeah, that's right.
And it was, what, 22 degrees out? You know, you know that was standard for us.
Trying to get it back. No, it was actually sub-zero. The coldest day, it's funny talking about North Dakota because my mom's side of the family is from Langdon, North Dakota. And you talk about how cold it can be up there. The two things, experiences that I had up in North Dakota, one was when I went up there and was riding a snowmobile at Christmas time, and it was minus 100 degrees. And if you blinked your eyes without goggles on, that your eyes would freeze shut.
Yeah.
And then the second time is when I was a little bit older, we had a six-pack of beer in the back of my cousin's car, and it froze solid and basically blew up, I guess you could say. So my two experiences in North Dakota. But by the way, that game in Buffalo that I wore long johns, I think it was like minus 40 degrees, minus 70 degrees wind chill factor. Coldest game in the history of the Buffalo Bills there I guess it's Ralph Wilson Stadium.
Yeah, I understand the long johns and stuff, but the Vaseline, the hand warmers, the, you know.
Hey, that was the tricks of the trade, you know, when you played in cold weather games. And one of the guys that probably first started doing this was Joe Namath. I mean, Joe Namath used to put on pantyhose and then Vaseline, which is, you know, you rub that on your skin everywhere on your body. Obviously, you couldn't do it in certain parts.
You were quarterback, Lugs? No, you were a defensive end, right? I mean, you were in the trenches.
I was in the trenches.
Okay. I just didn't want to get confused.
Yes, I used Vaseline. And if the only option of wearing something when the cold weather was pantyhose, I guarantee I would have wore it. What would you wear? Well, wait a minute. What did punters wear?
Free safety, Lugs. That was my first year.
And a safety. So your safety both. And a punter.
Yeah, there was no long johns, all right? Cut off sleeves. Huh?
All right, we'll take a break.
Like
he's
that.
Getting the better of me. Folks, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Cincinnati Bengals right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network. You can say that on the air. Go ahead. What were you telling me?
We were just talking about the Mallory brothers that are working for us. And,
yeah.
You know, Mike Mallory, our special teams coach, I don't know the exact fact, but I think he's the only two-time captain under Bo Schembechler.
That's right.
You know, at Michigan. And the degree of toughness, I mean, the mentality he has. And you were just commenting on both the Mallorys have worked for us and just how good of a job they've done, how tough they are. And I said, neither one of them would have worn pantyhose or long johns. I guarantee you that, Logs.
Well, we didn't call it pantyhose. We called it
nylons.
Under Armour cold gear.
There you go.
A nice, tougher way of saying, hey, by the way, do you even recognize this song?
Yeah, it's the Bison, man.
It is?
I can sing it for you.
If you do that, you know,
no.
Please don't.
No.
Please. Christmas show? Let's see if we get you to sing.
We had one that we sang in the locker room after the games.
What was that?
We called it Hail the Bison.
Oh, is that like something that, is that a school, like a school song?
Yeah, it was more of the football tradition. They sang it for many years there, so. I'm sure there's some Bison that live in the Jacksonville area that played football here. You know, Dick Erickson, he knows all about it, I'm sure.
It's funny, you talk about victory songs. I remember the victory song in high school, and we had one. And it was started by Alan Pinkett in that group in that era. Alan Pinkett, great running back, Notre Dame, was recruited by Jerry Faust. In fact, I remember when Jerry Faust pulled up in a big limousine at Parkview High School in Sterling, Virginia, to talk to Alan Pinkett, and everybody at the high school was freaking out because there was a limo in the parking lot, and all of a sudden Jerry Faust steps out. And we're like, oh, my gosh. And he was there to see Alan Pinkett. Well, Alan Pinkett was one of the guys that started with my brother, and the high school victory song was the Rolling Stones' Beast of Burden. Why in the world that they picked that song by the Rolling Stones as the victory song, I have no idea. But all I know is that when we won, we sang that song on the bus as loud as we possibly could.
Yeah, that's great times, huh, Lux?
I remember it now.
Yeah, you remember it.
Oh,
you sure do.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. All right, folks, for season tickets, single game tickets, or learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. This week is not only preparing for a road game in Cincinnati, but it's also preparing for the following week's game in London. You guys have a staff, Jimmy Luck and Hamza and everybody that really kind of does all the nuts and bolts of this whole kind of taking everything over to London to handle that. But has it been a challenge for you guys as a staff and as a team?
Well, it really hasn't, and I give a lot of credit to guys like Hamza and Jimmy Luck and all the people involved in it, because they've taken so much of the work out of it for us. I mean, it's so clear. We just follow really their instructions. And, you know, we've kind of hit our guys up a little bit each week for the past 3 weeks. Maybe just give them some tidbits of information 3 weeks ago, and then last week, and again this week, so that, you know, it's something that it's not all dumped onto them right now, the week before, and with the idea that maybe it'll eliminate some of the distractions that take place with the trip. So, you know, today was the first thing. The guys had to bring in their luggage for, you know, what they wanted in London for during the week, some of their street clothes, what they were going to wear. So all of them brought them in. And then we went out there, had a really good practice. So I think they're spreading it out pretty well so that we can avoid as much of a distraction as possible and keep our focus on getting ready for this game.
You learned a lot from last year. I mean, did you learn from being there last year the first time ever to where you say, okay, you know what, this year we'd like to do this different?
Well, I think there's some subtle changes that we made, but I think overall our players, you know, they, you know, I guess we have quite a few new guys, but I can remember last year where it was the unknown. They've heard good things about the London trip. They never experienced. They were going in, you know, waiting to see what took place. And then to go on the trip, see the facilities that we're in, the stadium that we played in, the fans that were there, it was a really good experience. And a lot of our guys now have experienced it, have passed that on to some of the newer players.
And the facility that you're going to be staying at this year, a little different, isn't it, this year? Because I remember last year, the 49ers, did they stay where the team is staying at this year?
I believe so,
yeah.
And I know just talking to them about their experience, they saw it as, you know, some good things about it. You know, it's, I think for us a concern is always meeting space and practice field. You know, what type of facility or what type of practice field are we going to have, the traction? You know, generally because it's the soil's looser, at least that's what we experienced last year. Mm-hmm. So you might have to temper practice a little bit, but, you know, we'll see how the facility is. They've had two other games over there already.
Do you get a chance to see anything while you're there? I mean, you know, as a football coach, you know, it's Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays for the most part are football, football, football. But by the time you get towards the end of the week, do you get to experience maybe any part of London or sights?
Well,
or
it's just, you know, like today, you know, we have the coaches show and then we might meet the offense and defense are meeting right now. But we generally try to get out of here a little bit earlier tonight, you know, maybe 8:30. And other than that, working all the way through Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So that schedule will be the same. So when we get there, the first time the coaches will have time to spend there will be maybe late Thursday night or maybe Friday afternoon. And, you know, we try to give them enough time to do that.
All right, we come back. I want to talk a little bit about the Cincinnati Bengals offense and the challenges that they represent with Andy Dalton, maybe the possible return of A.J. Green and also Muhammad Sanu, a wide receiver that many people might not have heard of. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Thank you, Joe. Jaguars fans, do you want a photo or tweet on the massive new Jaguars video boards, hashtag JagsGameDayLive, and be a part of the game experience? The social drive brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealership. Back on the Gus Bradley Show, Jeff Loggeman and the head coach, Gus Bradley. The Cincinnati Bengals offense present a lot of unique challenges, and the challenge may be greater if, in fact, that they get wide receiver A.J. Green. And just to give folks an idea of how good he is, in his first three seasons in the NFL, 260 catches, 3,833 yards. The catches are the most in NFL history. The yards are second most in NFL history for a wide receiver. This guy's a playmaker.
Very, very explosive. I mean, he can take the top off a defense. When we talk about our corner, stay on top, I mean, heavily emphasized with him. Just does a great job. Even if he's covered, they do a great job throwing the ball up to him. Andy Dalton's very accurate. Does a real, and for him and A.J., there's been a strong connection on the field. And you really trust him, and when they throw the ball up, usually A.J.'s the guy that comes down with it.
Well, and the reason I'm saying that if he plays, he's had a turf toe. He's missed the last three consecutive games, and then he missed one other game. So it's been something that's been bothersome for him for the entire season. Does he change a game plan? I mean, is he a guy that when he's on the field and he's playing that you say, okay, he's there, we need to do this now?
He is, you know, but they do a good job with their run game. They still are, you know, that's what they're committed to is running the ball. And, you know, they want to get that extra defender in the box to create one-on-one matchups with him. And so, yeah, there's going to be times when we have to put, you know, cloud coverage over him, play a little bit of cover two, or maybe it's some trail man or whatever we have to do just to you know, change up the looks that he's getting.
Okay, so we need to, I don't want to say dumb it down, but simplify a little terminology. You said trail technique, cloud technique. Explain to people kind of if a team has a dominant wide receiver, how do you provide maybe more attention to his side of the field?
Well, you know,
in simple terms,
right? It's difficult at times because you can, you know, they position him at different spots. So to say that, hey, let's just double team him wherever we go. Well, you can, but it creates mismatches other places. And, you know, really when the mismatch comes up is when you do that is versus the run. You're really counting on your front seven to really stop the run. And in some cases, that's really difficult to do. So, you know, I think when you play cloud coverage, you're really saying, all right, that's cover two, two deep safeties, and we're going to try to disrupt him at the line of scrimmage. And hopefully that disruption leads to poor timing by the quarterback and him with the safety over the top. Trail is the same type principle, but now the corner, instead of just reroute him, will actually reroute and trail him, taking away one leverage side.
So he's going to be underneath of him, trailing him, right, because he knows that he's got the safety over the top to help out.
Sure. And that's something that we don't do a lot, depending on down and distance situations. But those are type things that people look at and say, hey, do we want to cloud him? Do we want to trail him? Do we want to just play flat-out man? Do we want to rob him? You know, all those things come up when in conversation when you're talking about A.J. Green.
Okay, and then one way to disrupt that timing is to sack the quarterback. The tough thing is watching Andy Dalton on film. He does a great job of getting rid of the ball. He's also got a nice little bit of pocket presence. He's only been sacked 8 times this year.
Yeah,
that's an incredible number.
It is. You know, one of the least amount of sack teams in the league. So really good challenge for our front guys. We talk in terms of rush and coverage. So important this week with our front guys getting the pressure on him without the, you know, the additional blitz, because now you blitz, you're definitely one-on-one, you know, with a guy like A.J. Green. But there'll be some times. We're not going to shy away from that. We feel good about our principles, and if our guys really do how they're taught and how they've been practicing, how they've been playing, especially the last couple of games, we should be okay.
In his absence, and I'm talking about A.J. Green's absence, the wide receiver that really has taken the bulk of those catches has been Mohamed Sanu. Last week, 5 catches, 125 yards against the Ravens, and one of those catches was a one-handed catch. It was just simply fantastic. 6'2", 210 pounds, big guy, very athletic. He's kind of risen to the occasion.
He has. And, again, one guy goes down, another guy steps up, really a great story for Sanu. So, you know, both really tall receivers, 6'2", the other one's 6'4". So they've got some length out there on the perimeter. What I like about them is they do trust them. They will just give them opportunities to make plays. And so the challenge for us is, even though we're on top, we've got great coverage, it still comes down to who makes the play.
Now, when you say that they still trust them, when Andy Dalton drops back and it appears that the coverage is good with A.J. Green and Mohamed Sanu, he's going to throw it anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever looks at them and feels like they're covered.
Yeah.
You know, unless they're truly double-teamed or, you know, things like that. They may look at maybe certain coverages or if his timing is disruptive. And, you know, hopefully we can do that with some of our techniques, disrupt the routes right at the line of scrimmage, and then play tight coverage afterwards.
All right, we come back. I want to talk a little bit about their running game. Giovanni Bernard, a little bit of a question mark for the Cincinnati Bengals this week. Will he be able to contribute? Also, they have another injury along the offensive line, and we'll talk about that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
You know, since, Gus, you're on the injured list this week. I'll go ahead and read this card. Unless you think you can play her.
Go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
You want me to do it? Or are you going to grade me?
No.
When it comes to flavor, go the whole nine yards. Go for Goldfish crackers. They're tasty, fun treats that come in multiple varieties of deliciousness. So don't drop the ball. Grab the Goldfish. It's the official snack of game day. Not nearly as good as Gus.
No, Brown. No. That's really good, Logs. That's really good. And there's no doubt you were competing.
Uh-huh.
There is no doubt. Huh, Joe?
Always got to compete.
Against yourself. That one
Absolutely.
Was directed at me. I can sense it.
I'll compete against you. I'll compete against myself. I'll compete against Joe. I'll compete against this paper right here. I don't care. Let's compete. It's all about competition, Gus.
That's great, man. That's right.
And the Bengals running game. Giovanni Bernard, little bit of a question mark this week. He's been banged up. And watching the Indianapolis Colts game a couple weeks ago, he took a couple big-time shots. I don't know what it is that he has that is hurting him, but he's a question mark. Is he a great back, Giovanni Bernard?
Well, he definitely catches your attention. You know, you look at running styles and the type of running back he is and what he's accomplished, you know, as far as in the running game. He's, what, had like 500 yards rushing thus far, you know, in the carries.
450 ballpark, yeah.
Something like that. You know, anytime you're averaging around over four yards a carry. So just some unique styles. Had a long of over 80 yards, so he's got the burst. He's very talented.
And his backup, Jeremy Hill, a second-round pick out of LSU.
We really liked him coming out of the draft.
You did?
Really liked him, yeah. I know as a matter of fact, I think that was one of the visits we had. We brought him in. So just liked his toughness. He had some size, you know, 230 pounds, 6'1". Tough in a zone running scheme, could really handle, you know, the amount of carries that you're looking for in a back of that nature. So it'd be exciting to see him as well.
Now, the Bengals a little shorthanded on offense. They've been missing A.J. Green and then the talented tight end, I believe he was a first-round pick a year ago, Tyler Eifert, hurt his elbow in the first game of the season that they played the Baltimore Ravens, hurt his elbow, and he's on the designated injured reserve to return, much like Mercedes Lewis. By the way, how is Mercedes Lewis?
He's doing good. He's practiced the last couple of days. Done a great job. We have him on the service team, and, he's provided a really good look, especially this week for us with a guy like Gresham to prepare for.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. We got Andrew, who's calling from, I believe, the Panhandle Olustee. Okay, he's got a question about Carson Tinker. Good evening, Andrew.
Definitely wanted to say thanks for taking my call. And, I like to bring in a positive style. My daughter got accepted to South Dakota State University.
All right, the Jackrabbits, man.
The
Jackrabbits.
My uncle lives in Brookings, South Dakota. So.
Oh, she'll love it there.
Hey, do you got any connections up there for pheasant hunting?
I've talked to you guys on the outdoor show about that, and whatever you want. My uncle is in the South Dakota State Hall of Fame for eradicating the grasshoppers up there, Ben Cantac. My daughter sent in her application, in 3 days we get a handwritten note that she's accepted. You don't get that anywhere else.
Yeah, that's right, man.
That's awesome.
And just like you don't get that anywhere else, you don't get anything like the Jaguars. Nick Jacobs walked by, and my son was the only one to recognize him. He comes up to my son, and first thing my son says, "How did you like your time in New Orleans?" I have no idea where these players came from, but the kids today, they know. And he even goes, "Somewhat." He goes, "I love it in Jacksonville." And then also, Carson Tinker spent some time with my son at postgame. All I can say is my son researched him a little more that night and asked me to get his book, A Season to Remember. Well, you guys have made this a season to remember. I love the Jags. Take care.
Appreciate
Andrew,
that.
thank you very much for the call. The South Dakota Jackrabbits?
South Dakota State.
South Dakota State Jackrabbits.
University of South Dakota Coyotes.
Okay. Trying to get all
NBA,
that
stuff. It's your area, man. These are all animal names. I mean, the Coyotes, Jackrabbits. It's a hunter's paradise, Logs.
Oh, I love it. All right, folks, one more segment to go. We've got to take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Who does North Dakota State got this week?
I'm not sure who they play. I should know that. But
when do the playoffs start? For it's one double A.
Yeah,
right?
One double A. Okay. I think it's, you know, generally
first week of December, maybe.
Yeah, like November 21st, 22nd, probably somewhere in there. So they got a couple games left.
Now, I will say this. You know, I love football, and I'm a big fan of college football, the big games. But I really enjoy the 1AA playoff football. I would much rather watch a 1AA playoff game than some bowl game that has absolutely no meaning.
Yeah, you know, it's created a lot of positive feedback, I think, from fans, you know, watching those games and the intensity it brings, you know. And then if it goes into overtime, yeah. And, you know, it's because it's, you win, you keep going, and if you lose, you're out.
Well, they can't go too late into the December and January for North Dakota State, for God's sakes. They'll be frozen. They'll be playing hockey.
They're playing a dome, Log.
All right, folks, we'll talk to everybody same time, same place, next week right here on the Gus Bradley Show.
Okay, thank you.